Yeah. This thing, it slow down.
You are slower?
Yeah,
okay. Can I slowly slow down with this?
Noisy. Bit noisy.
Yes.
Comfortable.
When we go back to the Godhead, the classrooms will have fans that are marked, which fan goes to which button. Discussing the first, we discussed Arjuna's noble reasons for not fighting, and then we've discussed his surrendering to Krishna, who at once calls him a nonsense rascal and explains to him the real identity of the living being as an eternal conscious soul. In different, from different angles of vision, Krishna has explained the soul as eternally existent, unkillable, unchangeable, always existing, never created, unburnable, undrownable, in so many ways beyond material conditions. And he says, the sober person is not bewildered. He sees clearly this distinction. Now, in the next verses, 26 to 28, Krishna will be looking at things from a different point of view. Essentially, he says, suppose you think that there is no eternal soul, that is just consciousness temporarily created as a result of material interactions. In fancy terms, that it's an epiphenomenon of matter, just a byproduct of material, or a result of material bubbling and churning, then his argument is, from a materialistic point of view, accepting this idea, so what? There's no soul, there's just the body, it's all matter. So if we knock off a batch of matter, so what? That's the argument. Hey, Bhishma, Drona, all your cousins and friends, they're just, you know, bags of matter. What's the big deal? In modern digital terms, we'd say they're all just ones and zeros. 1111, that's Bhishma. 10111, that's Drona. 10111111, that's Karna. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're just ones and zeros, ons and offs. So what? If you press the switch and, you know, now it's 011 instead of 101, so what? If you have a batch of chemicals lying in a beaker on the shelf and they get knocked off and hit the ground and have to be cleaned up, what's the big deal? Would you go, oh, my chemicals are... That's the argument. Suppose you think that there is no soul, that the soul or the so-called symptoms of life may just always be born, and once they're dead forever. What are you crying about? That's his argument. What are you crying about? Good argument, huh? If you look at it from the spiritual point of view, what are you crying about? They're never going to die. If you look at it from the material point of view, what are you crying about? They're going to have to die. That's the next point. Jata sihi dhruva mrityur dhruva jatma mrtasya cha. For one who's born, death is certain. So, what's the big thing? Or, dhruvam jatma mrtasya cha. Jata sihi dhruva mrityur. And we accept that after birth, after death, one's born again. So you either take both halves of the equation, or even one half. If you think that he dies and he's born again, well, okay, you know, that's going to happen. And even if you think he dies and he dies, either way. Different way of looking at it. And then in the next verse, Avyakta Adini Bhutani, Yakta Madhyani Bharata, Avyakta Nindanyeva, Tatraka Paridevana. He's not there, then he's there, then he's not there. So, what's all the boo boo about? What's the whole thing? Bhishma, Drona, and Karna, and all the facts, they weren't there, now they're there, and later they're not going to be there. Is that surprising to anyone? Is that unusual? Is that tragic? We said, well, that's life. Why are you lamenting over it? It's inevitable. They're all going to die. They're all going to die. Why are you lamenting over something which is natural, inevitable? If they died on Tuesday instead of Thursday, is that a big problem? See the argument? Your materialistic friend comes, I don't believe in any soul. It's just all matter. Okay, walk in front of the car. Bye-bye. By the way, look where you could get with ethics on this. Since death is inevitable, so I can do whatever I want, but Krishna's not advising our view that way. But the materialistic scientists, since nothing is real, since everything is just matter, but using it the way Krishna is using it, look at it this way, you know. Suppose in the Iraq War, they've lost now probably about 3,000 Americans. Roughly 3,000. Is anyone lamenting, and how much gear have they lost? You know, planes and tanks and cartridges and missiles and, you know, all that stuff. Now, is anybody lamenting over all the hardware that we've lost in Iraq?
No.
No. But 3,000 American lives, everybody's, we lost so many lives. If it's all chemicals, why are you lamenting so much over the 3,000 Americans rather than the, you know, 47,000 spent cartridges or something, you know, 400,000 spent cartridges? I think it's about 600,000 Iraqis, by the way.
kill.
600 to 3. Yeah. When we
some there was a question. I saw a hand.
I pointed the heart where he don't suffer but souls. In his prison they suffer.
Can't hear you.
The heart where doesn't suffer. But this prison they suffer. The difference.
Present they suffer.
So it's saying the people,
utterly
suffer, whereas the hardware doesn't suffer. They're not feelings.
Yeah, but that suffering is just a batch of chemical reactions. Why are you so? What's the big deal about it? It's just matter acting in a certain pattern. You know, like moving my cursor around the screen, it's something like that. Just a pattern of. Just a pattern of interactions, just chemical interactions. You know, when the little thing fires off in my brain, I say, ooh, I'm happy. Mm-hmm. Another little thing fires off, I say, oh, that's lousy. That's just chemistry. Why are you lamenting over, you know, again, 1110 instead of 111001? Why are you lamenting that it's one pattern instead of another? If everything's just matter.
Nobody won't suffer. Nobody likes to suffer. So I should call somebody suffer.
They don't like to suffer, but, you know, why should you care? There's nobody anyway. Those bodies are just bodies. They're just chemistry. There's no real person suffering. It's just material interactions. So why are you, you know, it's just, you know, like the fetus in the womb. It's not really a person. It's just a, you know, it's just a, some kind of organic mass, you know, like a, what do they say, like a fingernail or something. So, all the rest of these people are just fingernails.
Then doesn't matter anything.
Nothing, yes, nothing matters. Taking your philosophy and bringing it to its ultimate point, nothing matters. It's just, you know, why is 1111 better than 1110? Now it just happens that 1110 is strangling a little girl, and 1110, or the other one, is, you know, offering $15,000 to the Save the Children Foundation. But objectively, they're just different patterns of ones and zeros. Why should we care? Nothing means anything. Taking the materialistic viewpoint to its ultimate. Isn't that where you get?
And the philosophy you get is just enjoy sense gratification.
Yeah, that's what you're nothing means anything, but let's enjoy sense gratification. Sure, that's how it manifests itself.
Yeah.
Nothing is real, nothing matters, and everything's just, you know, material things. There's nothing there. But let's have a good time.
It's
all a dream, but let's enjoy it. Of course, here Krishna's not arguing that. But he's making the case. Even if you think, like these so-called scientists, or the Lokayatikas, is that who the Prabhupada mentions? Vaisheshika and Lokayatikas.
Yes.
Even if you take their point of view, that everything is just matter, why should you be lamenting? So Krishna's, again, pulling it apart from every point of view. If you think the soul's eternal, no reason not to fight. If you think there's no soul, no reason not to fight. Any questions? Okay, moving on. Of course, looking at 28 from the spiritual point of view, the soul's unmanifest, and it's manifest, and it's unmanifest. You don't see it, and you see it, and you don't see it. Why is that something lamented? verses to be read and thought about, meditated on, all of these verses can say concerning the nature of the soul and the nature of the living entity. Okay. 29 is summary. That the soul is wonderful, Ashtarjava means wonderful or amazing. Some hear about it, some talk about it, some this way, that way, some hear about it, and some, even after they hear about it, they don't get it. Veda na chayava kashchit. Some get it, some don't, but it's amazing. The soul is amazing. That's Krishna's. And then finally again, back to text 30 is the real summary. The Dehi Nityam. Dehi, the person within the Deha, within the body, is Nityam. And Abhadyoyam, he can't be killed. Dehe Sarvasya. All the different bodies. Tasma, therefore, Sarvani Bhutani, Natvam Shojita Marasi. Again and again, this is the Natvam Shojita Marasi, Natvam Sarvani. There's no reason for you to live. Okay? Yes?
If Krishna is saying like that, that soul is eternal, and he is saying that there is no soul, giving up both the ways. Then by the people who know about Bhagavad Gita particularly, why they cry, means why they cry on the death of somebody.
Yes, one thing is there's so many people, yes, I know Bhagavad Gita. But then do they know Bhagavad Gita? Prabhupada gives the example that you train a parrot to chant Hare Krishna and it's chanting Hare Krishna. But then when you know some cat goes after it and wants to kill it. You know, doesn't think, now's the time I should chant Hare Krishna. He's just, I wrote, he's chanting. So someone, yes, I know Bhagavad Gita, but does he know Bhagavad Gita?
But I don't think that there is any person in the world who don't cry.
Yeah, then that's the next point. And people, even knowing Bhagavad Gita, still they'll feel some. Prabhupada said that. Does it mean that if your father dies, you won't cry? You'll cry. But you'll know. And you'll feel something. But by your intelligence, by philosophy, you'll know that actually my father hasn't died. Actually, it's like that. You may feel, naturally you'll feel something. But you won't be, what is that? Overwhelmed. You know, there's the philosophical side. Now we'll miss this person, but you have knowledge of what actually is happening. Now, you don't touch this movement. You remain still sober. And the person who has no knowledge is just
over. One question also. Arjun is saying that in the first chapter that it's better that I should take begging instead of killing my brothers and teachers also. So I don't think there is any harm on the behalf of Arjun if he takes sannyas or if he takes something like that.
Yeah, you think it's not a bad idea. Arjun has given a good proposal in the first chapter, but listen, why all this unnecessary killing? Why don't I just take sannyas? Then these people won't have to die. I won't have to get involved in sinful reactions. And it sets a good example. That's a good idea.
Like we say also, somebody's not born as a sannyasi or somebody's not born as a brahman or kshatriya, it depends on our karma, or you can say. And we can change our karma also, that if I'm Vishudra, then I can go to the stage of the brahman also. then it may be possible with Arjuna also that he can become a sannyasi.
Oh, well, Arjuna, why don't you just become a sannyasi? It's very good. People change their karma. You can just take sannyas. That's Arjuna's proposal. Listen, why should I fight? Let me take sannyas. Okay, let's hold on to that. That argument is going to come up several times in the chapters that go on. Krishna is not going to let that fly or go unnoticed. Mm. Arjuna's proposal is, listen, I'll take sannyas, it won't be a problem. Krishna is going to answer that. Okay? So hold on to it. Every one of these points that come up in the first chapter, Krishna is going to answer by the time the book is over. You'll know.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Yes?
Say a relative dies, and you read Bhagavad Gita, and you have the knowledge, but the condition of the heart may not be so pure, and then you get, is it vijnana that keeps you from...
It's vijnana, and one could say it's the way we're wired also.
Right.
Naturally, there has to be some feeling, we're not just machines.
Right.
But by knowledge...
It soothes it.
And one should not be overwhelmed by this or by that.
Mm-hmm.
Matras parshastaka. And Krishna said you have to tums to take shasapar. You have to tolerate. In the cold weather, will we feel some cold? Yes. In the hot weather, will we feel? But I have to go on with my duty. In the summer, is it fun to go into the kitchen? No. In the winter, is it lots of fun to take your cold bath? No. But I have to be above the dualities of heat and cold. By knowledge, by training.
So in the same vein, why doesn't Krishna say that you're lamenting and that's okay? I understand, it's understandable, that's the way we're wired, but fight.
That's also all right. The problem is not that Arjuna's got a few tears, but it's like, my bow is falling from my hand, I want out of here. That's the problem. If you cry and shoot, that might be okay. Messes up your aim a bit. But. The problem is that Arjuna is completely overwhelmed. Or Govinda, I will not fight, I can't do it. That's the problem. Krishna's not complaining that Arjuna, you have feelings, this is bad. But you're neglecting your duty. In fact, it will come up now. That puts us exactly where we are. But the next verse is 31. Svadharma mapichaveksha na vikampito marmasi dharmyad hi yutach trayamyad kshatriyasya. Now let's look at things from another point of view. You have, you're a kshatriya. We talked about your position as soul. We've talked about the reality of whether anyone's really going to get killed here. Now let's look at your duty. Svadharma. This Svadharma term is very important. It will come up in many places in Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam. Svadharma means, in brief, the duty that we have to perform. In this context, it's our duty according to Varnashram. What's your name? No, next week.
Kulashekhar,
you're tired this morning, Kulashekhar. Get enough rest? No. So, if you're really, really tired, take rest. Otherwise, be a little bit in front of the wall, otherwise you and the wall will merge. So So your kshatriya, swadharma, means your duty according to varnashram dharma, is that you're a kshatriya. And for you, there's nothing better than fighting karma, karmya, for religious principles. You're not fighting just to get some money or to get some, but you're fighting for the sake of dharma. So why? It's good for you. Yes.
Just a proverb of number 30, Prabhupada says that though the soul is immortal, violence is not encouraged, but at war, during wartime, it's not discouraged. So what about wars nowadays?
Good question. We'll discuss this at length when we get to chapter 16, Divine and Demonic Natures. But briefly, let's touch upon it. What's your question, and
like,
flesh it out a little bit?
War, is it encouraged in, like, in Kali Yuga, like the wars that...
Is war encouraged in Kali Yuga by whom?
Well, it's discouraged normally, but if there's a war now, is killing justified?
Is killing justified if there's a war now? Why don't we turn that around and say, what are people fighting for? What are people fighting for?
For their demonic attitudes.
Oil. Does come to mind.
Land
definitely comes to mind, especially strategically located land.
Trying to bring peace in the world.
Trying to peace in the world. Who's fighting to bring peace into the world?
United States of America.
The United States of America is fighting to bring peace into the world. How about that? How many people here believe that?
Will the
world's laughing. Why are you laughing? We're talking about the United States of America.
World order.
World order.
To bring order to the world, or to bring a certain kind of order to the world?
To control.
Yeah, made in America, to bring a certain kind of order.
Control.
Say. Shall we call it power?
Power. Control.
Shall we call it control?
Yeah, control.
Okay. Shall we call it empire?
Yeah, that sounds better.
What's the motivating?
Excuse me?
Politicians, they...
Politically motivated.
Yeah.
Certainly politically motivated. Start a war, you know, right before the election if you can.
Yeah, they put down the price of gas.
We'll be here through October, and the American election is in November. We'll see whether any wars start between now and then.
They've got Iran and North Korea.
Hmm?
They've lined up Iran and North Korea now.
We'll see what might happen. Maybe not. Yes?
Through political manipulation, people stand to make a lot of money.
Excuse me?
People can make a lot of money.
Oh, money is certainly a
debit.
Profit.
Yes.
War for fun and profit, certainly. So we're looking at the idea of... Yes?
My question is that... if they are fighting for this thing, this is not a... They are doing wrong thing. But the one who is soldier, the one who is fighting for the country purpose of point of view. Because in the... when it was war between the Arjuna team and the Kauravas, then the soldier who are not responsible, but they have to do their duty.
That's true. The soldiers are supposed to do their duty as soldiers. That's
but
the
are they doing any sinful activity by doing that? Will they get something like the...
Well... Comments? Yes.
You join the army, you're willingly going, and you're thinking your cause is just.
Everyone's performing sinful activity.
Yeah.
It's not that people... In the Vedic culture, everyone's working, essentially dedicating their work for the sake of the Supreme.
But they should do not to do that. Not simple activity. Because they have no option with that.
Everyone has an option. But everyone's options are well, you have conscription. If you're conscripted, you have very little choice. You're forced to change the world. But those who are volunteering, the nature of the material world is you volunteer, then you're killing innocent people, but then you're getting paid some money. You don't volunteer, you know, you're out on the street, you're out of luck, you got no job, you got no money. All of the options may be unattractive for someone. The first principle is that the wars being fought these days are generally not very religious wars. Although it's made out that everyone's fighting over religion, or fighting for religion, that it's religiously motivated war. The likelihood that that's true is very small, as compared to the likelihood that that's all trumped up. In order to justify fighting for those other things like money, like power, like man, like oil. So.
Sometimes people ask, you know, what's the difference between the war that's, you know, that Krishna actually pushed and the war that's taking place, the religious wars that's taking place nowadays, because people are...
What religious war is taking place nowadays?
I mean... you know, like the jihad, for example. You know, they're claiming that they're doing the work of God, you know, and so on like that. So,
well, what is that? I mean, we don't want to get too deep into politics here. We'll try not to. But when the largest armies of the world descend upon your country in strength, it may not be the most irreligious thing to try to protect your family, your way of life, your religious culture, and so on. Imagine if, you know, armed, you know, 50,000 armed thugs descended on Mayapur here. You know, we might have some religious sentiments about it. And then they advertise, you know, that there's these religious fanatics who are, you know, determined to take over the world and who are, you know, opposing the armies of freedom in Sridhar Mayapur. Not to say that there aren't religious fanatics. Not to say that there aren't people who are doing evil things in the name of religion, but to say that at least I'm going to be, it's going to be hard to sell me on the worldview that Islam is, you know, there's a clash between this fanatical Islamic culture which hates the freedoms of the West and is trying to just interested in killing innocent people for the sake of destroying democracy, and the armies of freedom are defending, you know, everything decent in human life. You know, I'm gonna have a hard time with that one. I'm not buying today. Thank you very much. Not to say that there aren't values in Islam that I might disagree with, in particular its historical employment of violence. Not to say that people haven't used that and, you know, taken it way over the edge, as in Aurangzeb's time. That wasn't a lot of fun. So can religion be misused as an excuse for terrorism or, you know, whatever you want to do? Sure. is that the dominant force for war in the present world situation? I doubt it. Is that enough politics for one day?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's get a bargain.
Let's keep going back to
Maj, I was listening to one cassette of Bin Laden in Arabic.
We just finished with this.
We just finished this. So now, very interesting. Here we see Lord Krishna fighting to establish Dharma. Okay? So I heard in Arabic, which I could understand what he's trying to say, that he's saying, Hua Kal Mal America, means he says, these Americans, he says, they are trying to introduce gay system, lesbian. He said, have you ever heard this in Islam? No. So he says, we must get rid of them before our women become prostitutes. This was sort of a thing. So he says, if you want to follow Islam, this is the right dharma. This is how he's... Now, who's right?
Well, as we said, we don't want to get too much into politics. I can tell you one thing, that according to a professor who I was reading briefly, Bin Laden's outstanding characteristic is not his military strategic brain. It's not his personal organizational capabilities. It's not his money. It's his literary...
Speech, yeah.
Not even his charisma as a speaker, it's his literary capability. The man is eloquent to the point of poetic. He's not a person who, you know, when you read his stuff, he's not incoherent. He's not, doesn't make arguments that no sensible person could make head or tail of. He's lucid. He's coherent. He's systematic. He's eloquent and to the point of poetic in the way that he writes. Now, whether we agree with him or not on any or all of his points is another question. But he's not a fool. He's not a person who has no ability to reason. So you have to look at what... he is a person who... Nobody knows what he's saying in the West. You can't pick up the New York Times and find out what Bin Laden's, you know, actual thoughts are. But should you pick up his epistles, as they're called, his writings, he's not irrational. You know, he's not just a person who's acting out of, you know, just... All there is emotion, and there are no ideas there, there are no arguments there, there's no thought there, there's no sense there. There's method, there's sense, there's argument, there's reason, there's evidence that he uses to back up his points, some of it factual evidence of, you know, historical things in the world, a lot of Quranic evidence. He argues the way we argue, you know, and as stated in, you know, where we'd say Bhagavad Gita, he's saying the Quran. So he's, that much I'll say, he's not just a cuckoo bird.
Mm.
Now, whether you agree with him or not,
it's a different...
is another question. And I'm not going to, you know, bring that in. But I will say we would agree with him on there are points on which almost any sensible person would agree with him. Mm. Now, I'm sure there are points we'd agree with Hitler on. Or Jack the Ripper even probably had, you know, one or two good ideas. So, and would we agree with all the, you know, thinking of, say, George W. Bush and Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld, that, you know, everything they may say is true, it all makes sense, it all follows point after point, it's all, you know, dharmic. You know, it's very clear, all the white hats are over here and all the black hats are over here, and that's all we need to know. situation is more complex. Now, because this is not a political history course or current events course, we are not going to go too much deeper into that right now. But these are ideas. What we're reading in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita is a set of ideas coming, in fact, from the Supreme Personality of God. They're not the ideas of modern popular culture. They're not necessarily in sync with the ideas of the framers of the U.S. Constitution. They may not be approved by the Supreme Court or the American Congress or the British Parliament. They might be in conflict with certain principles of Islam. They're ideas. And they need to be thought about. What are their, you know, how far does it go? What are the ramifications of this? It goes very deep. It's a completely different set of, it's a different way of thinking. The idea of prescribed duty. Very different way of thinking than the modern way of thinking. You know, the modern way of thinking is like, so what do you want to do? You know, what would you like to do? What would you like to do? What would you like to be? What would you like to everything's like, what about you? And in Bhagavad Gita and in Vedic culture, it's about what is your duty? Dharma samudacheta, I'm bewildered, not about, you know, what I want to do. My dear Krishna, I'm bewildered about what I want. No. I'm bewildered about what I'm supposed to do. We were hearing from Shariyas. Bhishma, his problem was, what is my duty? Not what's going to make me happy. What's my duty? In modern values, it's all about what's going to make me happy. In Bhagavad Gita, it's all about what is my duty. And in fact, that's part of the problem. In the first chapter, it's all, what's going to make me happy? Bhogan, what is that? And we give up all the things that will make us happy will be spirited with blood. How will we be happy? Kapriti said to Dharma, what happiness will there be in killing the sons of Buddha? It's all about what's going to make me happy. You can look at it that way, that Bhagavad Gita is practically a dialogue between the values of modern civilization represented by Arjuna and the values of Vedic civilization, Vedic knowledge represented by or spoken by Krishna. That's an oversimplification. But Arjuna's arguments in the first chapter are very much in sync with our modern Western way of thinking. What about my happiness? Yeah, like in marriage. You know, but I'm not happy anymore. When we first met, it was so nice, but it's not happy anymore. And she goes off and, you know, finds another guy. Mm-hmm. Or for him, it's like, you know, hey, that was 40 years ago when she looked good, you know. Now I'm risen. Hey, I got money, I got brains, I got, you know, hey, any girl in the office would be, like, privileged to you know, associated with me. You know, it's all about what's good for my senses. Mm-hmm. And that's important, you know. People say, well, yeah, but she wasn't happy with him anymore. Why should she be forced to be in a situation where she wasn't happy? He didn't love her anymore. Of course, you know, it just makes sense. He didn't love her. You know, that's all fine. You know, we dump a couple of kids here and a couple of kids there and we rearrange everything and, you know, sign the papers and it's all done. And it's all about, you know, what's going to make us happy. And it has nothing to do with what is my duty.
Arjuna is arguing that. That's what Arjuna is doing.
So Arjuna is essentially arguing, well, you know, I don't see how any happiness is going to come out of this. And Krishna is arguing it's your duty. Right here in this, the verse is coming up, it's your duty. Okay. We're hearing that people are feeling claustrophobic, congested, and so on, because this room is kind of like that. So we're going to take a break, and it's going to be such a break, we're going to turn up all the fans to maximum and throw you all out of the room. We'll see you in 5 minutes.
Thank you.
No, shoot all the politicians, the Arab ones, the Muslim ones, the Hindu ones, shoot all the politicians. Kshatriyas are happy when they get a chance to fight. they're happy with, you know, they don't want to just sit around the barracks and talk. It's real Kshatriyas, they want to fight. They're itching to go. Something like, if you think about the mentality of sports, because there's some kinship there, where the sportsmen, they want to get out there and, you know, even risk their lives. These race car drivers and, you know, what do they call extreme sports? They risk their lives all the time. But they would rather do that than sit around in an office somewhere and sign checks. It's their spirit to want to be out there at the edge, risking their lives in some, you know, climbing a mountain or driving a sports car or whatever it is.
Adrenaline.
Hmm?
Adrenaline.
Yeah, adrenaline and all of that. So the Kshatriyas, the real Kshatriyas, they're into it. They, you know, there's a fight. Okay. Now we get a chance we've been, you know, we're looking for it. They're looking for the opportunity to exercise their powers. Even if you think about firemen who are maybe something like Kshatriyas in some way. You know, they wanted to join the force. They looked for the opportunity to go out there and, you know, risk their lives and, you know, bang on windows and do the thing with the ladders and all that kind of stuff they do and, you know, rescue some people from the building and, you know, cough out all that smoke at the end of the day. You know, it's what they look forward to doing. They don't look forward to just sitting around the firehouse doing nothing. So, when the Kshatriyas get a chance to fight, they're happy. And Swarga Dwarma Bhavartas. If you die on the battlefield, you're elevated to the heavenly planets. Therefore, Krishna will argues before. If you die, you go to heaven, and if you live, that means you win. So you get the kingdom. Either way, you can't lose. So essentially the same argument is being made here. It's your duty to fight. It's your duty. You're put aside all your, oh, but it's this, oh, but it's that. It's your duty.
Can heavenly attainment be attained by the soldiers near this?
Yes.
Yes.
The soldiers who die on the battlefield attain smart. That's what's
in the present day.
We reserve comment. So it's an interesting thought, though, what these people will get. One thing is, do they fight according to religious principles? You know, the Kshatriyas, they're like in sports, you know. You can't hit a man when he's down and all that kind of stuff in sports. Otherwise, they'd be going, and then, you know, they were booing the wrestlers in Kamsa's arena. You're just fighting with two boys, you know. It violated their sense of sportsmanship. So, you know, in a religious war, among Kshatriyas, you know, if the guy doesn't have a chariot, you don't fight against him. Because you have a chariot, you get down from your chariot, you fight. He doesn't have a weapon, you hand him a weapon, and then you go to it. Now, you know, they'll burn villages and
plug cars.
Car bombing. You won't talk about which country introduced car bombing in the Middle East, by the way. but, you know, it's the whole idea of attacking civilian populations. of the 600,000 Iraqis killed in Iraq so far, more than half are women and children. That's not exactly fighting on religious principles. So what do the so-called, what do the soldiers get in this age?
There are a lot of times in the Battle of Kurukshetra that where they didn't follow.
Yeah, they sometimes broke the rules there too. True. It was really all out. They sometimes broke the rules there. But at least they had, you know, they knew what they were doing. They were breaking the rule under some exceptional circumstances. Here there's not even rules.
Geneva.
And that's what started the war. Kurukshetra war. You're insulting a woman. You know, a respectable woman, you're insulting him. You know, that's war. Now,
yeah, well,
300,000 women and children killed. Yeah, what is that? That's fighting on religious principles.
For me, the question is whether the soldiers fighting on the side of Duryodhana went to heaven, whether they should go to
they
heaven.
They fought according to, even Duryodhana's soldiers, they fought according to duty.
Yeah.
Okay, we're fighters, we have to fight. We happen to be on this side, so we fight. They got the better deal. They were facing Krishna. They killed so many. They all attained liberation, actually.
They were fighting for, because a woman had been insulted by their leader.
Yeah. But they're fighting because it's their occupational duty. So dharma means your occupational duty. That concept is very, very strong in Vedic culture.
Yeah.
It's your duty. You know, every occupation has its problems. If you're a Brahmin, sometimes you do a yajna for some, you know, not such a good person. If you're a Kshatriya, sometimes you have to fight on the wrong side. If you're a Vaishya, sometimes you're engaged in some shady business. If you're a sutra, sometimes you're working for a bad test. But you have some principles about your occupation. So that's called sutram. You may be fighting for this side or for that side, but he has to fight, and while fighting, he has to follow some principles.
But that would also apply to modern soldiers, wouldn't it?
It should, but what are their principles?
No principles.
Well, they're being paid, and so out of duty.
I'm being paid, so I'll do anything after. And our leader is, you know, way in the back.
Right. In the bunker.
Safely, you know, he's got an underground bunker someplace. If things ever got rough, he's got a place to go.
Duryodhana himself. We understand he went to heaven.
Yeah.
Why would Duryodhana go to heaven?
He was
killed by Krishna's devotee.
He's not
the presence of the personality of God in himself.
He's not an ordinary soul.
Not an ordinary person, and he's fortunate. Everyone, you know, Kurukshetra is a great carnage, all these people, but actually they all attained liberation. Because they died in the presence of Krishna and Arjuna.
Kulashekhar.
Yeah. So it's said that Prabhupada gives an example in the Supreme Court when the judge orders a death penalty for somebody that has killed someone. So he's just doing his duty. So somebody, a soldier, he kills, he's being ordered by superiors to do that. But if he independently kills, out
right.
of the line of duty, he gets some reaction.
Right.
And then
right.
he does it in the order of.
That's the basic principle. In Kali Yuga, everything is. It should be that you're a soldier, you fight, you know, you get some credit, some merit also. Everything is so bad in Kali Yuga that, you know, if you're a soldier, what is your business? To kill women and children and young boys, and some men also.
But
but the majority of the people you kill will be women and children. That's your, you know, that's your duty as a kshatriya in Kali Yuga. Your duty as a vaishya is to, you know, rip off 3/4 of the world. Your duty as a Brahmin is to preach some atheistic philosophy. And your duty as a Shudra is to be President of the United States.
From Texas.
Okay, let's see how far we go here. Tathachet tvam imam dharmyam sangramam nakarishyasi tatasvatarvam kirtim cha vidva apam avashyasi. Krishna said, Arjuna said, well, sin will overtake us for this terrible killing. Krishna says, sin will overtake you for not killing. Vidva svadharmam, svadharmam, if you give up your svadharma, you'll also lose your reputation and you'll get sinful reactions. Papam avachasi. Kirtim hitva, you'll lose your reputation, and papam avachasi, you'll gain sinful reactions. Not kirishasi, if you don't perform your duty of fighting, then your gain will be your sinful reactions, and your loss will be your reputation. Akirtim, Krishna's following that. Akirtim chapi bhutani katiyashyanti te vyayam sampavitasya cha kirtir madanada durichyate. Everyone will speak about your nonsense, your cowardice, and for a respectable person, dishonor is worse than it's worse than that. And that was actually the kshatriya sense of honor, that I would rather die than lose my honor. The real kshatriyas, they would rather die than surrender. They would rather die than flee. But you have to have that. In a kshatriya, you know, if the kshatriya is such a person who's always calculating, how am I going to save my life? He's the wrong guy. You want the guy who's ready to say, you know, we risk everything, but we have to do this. That's the kshatriya spirit. Again, the fireman. The fireman's thinking, uh-oh. Looks like a lot of flame and smoke. We better hang back on this one, guys. But he's the wrong guy. You need a guy to say, hey, you know, there's flame, there's smoke, we're going up there. You know, there's people in that building. That's a fireman. Not the person who's always, you know, and you read it the next day in the New York Times, say, you know, fireman shrunk back because, you know, it was hot. You know, that's so dishonorable. You know, the firemen, you know, they value their, you know, we're the guys who go in there when it's dangerous. That's, you know, their sense of honor. And they honor, you know, they lose men. And those men are honored because they gave their lives to protect people. You know, policemen, the firemen. That's the kind of spirit that they would, you know, we may die, but our honor will be upheld. So the soldier, real soldier, he thinks like that. That, you know, our unit may go down, we're going to go down fighting. That's the spirit. So, here, just the opposite. Yarana Bhuparatan Vansyante Tvam Maharata Yesham Chitvam Bahuvato Gutva Yasyasi Bhagava. Yasyasi Bhagava means, Bhagava means lightweight. Everyone will think you're a lightweight. All these great generals who thought so highly of you, Bhuvata, they had a great opinion about you. Now they'll think, you know, he's a coward. He showed his true colors when things got rough, he ran. Avacha Bharams Chabhu, Varishanti Tavahita, Nindantas Tavasamartam, Tato Dukataram. They'll all just badmouth you and speak about your infamy. What could be more painful for you than that? Imagine a soldier, you know, general, and at the last minute he just ducks out. Who is that? Antony, Mark Antony, for a different reason. He got into a thing with Cleopatra and he left the battlefield. What happened to his reputation? That's how. So this sense of honor among Kshatriyas, you know, still it's found to some extent, and in former days it was so strong.
Julius Caesar.
So many. Even among the Kshatriya women, that sense of, which the famous story is there, how, which women were it?
Jean d'Arc.
Jhansi, Rani. Her husband went down and she took dressed like him and went out and challenged all the guys. But it was typical. This was, especially in Rajasthan, the Kshatriyas were like this. That, you know, they'd be fighting and fighting and fighting. Suppose there was a siege against the city. They're fighting and fighting. And okay, now the end has come. You know, we can't hold out anymore. So then what happens? They run the white flag up the castle?
No.
Like to death.
They dress up, I think, in saffron even. They just, you know, they all arm themselves to the teeth. They throw open the gates of the city. They go out there and they kill as many people as possible. They're all mowed down. And they die honorably.
Yeah.
And the women commit suicide.
And the women would immolate themselves rather than, you know, be grabbed by these enemies and dishonored. They would kill themselves. The men would go out there and fight to the death, and the women would rather die than be touched by these rascals. Such a sense of honor. And now it's going to be, you're going to run. You're just going to walk off the battlefield? You're going to think everyone's going to...
Oh, yeah, Arjuna became a saint. Exactly, they'll all laugh at you.
You know, the women will talk to you about you. Oh, yeah, Arjuna. That, you know, that's how it'll be. Everybody will, you know, you walk on the street, everybody...
Yeah,
they've
been buried.
What could be more painful to you? You know, you've been honored, you're famous all over the world as the greatest archer, the greatest, you know, brave soldier, and now you're going to be known as the coward of Kurukshetra. What could be more painful? Tato va prasthasi swargam jitva va bhokshase mihim tasmanutishta kontya yupayakati. This we just discussed. That if you win, you get the kingdom, and if you lose, you get heaven. So, where's the question in that fight? And then finally, Sukha Dukhe Sume Gudva La Pa La Po Dreyani Tho Yu Paya Yudrashva Naivam Pabhavati. Don't consider loss or gain, just consider what your duty is. and Arjuna's on Krishna speaking on this line, what your duty is. Don't consider whether you'll be happy or not happy, whether you're going to lose, whether you're going to gain, whether you'll any of this. Just consider your duty and fight. Any questions? Yes.
I'm just confused a little bit that if there are two parties, like both are fighting, and one must be of the fight according to the religion, and other must be against according to religion. If both are of them according to religion, then there must be no fight.
No, that's good. Just like in wrestling, one fighter has to fight according to the rules of wrestling. And the other fighter has to fight according to the rules of wrestling. Not that, you know, they can just do anything. They have to fight according to the rules of the National Wrestling Association. And then the fighting, then they're both honored. They're both paid, well, you know, $40 billion just for showing up in the ring. But they're honored that they fought. According, you know, they fought a good match. They fought according to the principles of wrestling. But if some guy goes in there and starts, you know, hitting below the belt and all that kind of stuff, But it's not that because they're both following the rules, they both walk out. Dharma doesn't just mean religion, like, you know, going to church and praying on Sunday. It means your duty. The duty of a soldier is to fight. So some soldiers will fight for one side, some soldiers will fight for the other side, but if they're living according to Vedic principles, they'll follow the duty of a country.
Like if say any power like India, Pakistan or any like British when come to the India also, or like Kurukshetra war, one is against the religion, one is opposed the religion, one is favor on the religion, one is following the religion, another is not following the religion. So if they all die, if all the soldiers who die in that war and will go to the heaven.
One is following a religion, one is not following. Means what?
Religion principle.
What is the religious principle?
Like Kauravas are not in the principle, they know they are doing wrong.
They're doing wrong, but their soldiers are fighting according to the principles, you can say, of religion. What is that religion? That the duty of a kshatriya is to fight. We have to fight according to certain principles. They're doing that.
But
even if they're on the wrong side, just like Drona and Bhishma. From one angle of vision, we can analyze and say they become irreligious. But from another angle of vision, we say they're kshatriyas, they're fighting, they're doing their duty.
So all of them will go to the heaven if
they
did. And at night after the war, they get together.
That also, right. They would fight during the day. Again, it's, you know, that kind of like sporting. Not that they weren't serious. And not that sports isn't serious either. Yeah, sports gets very serious. But, you know, they fight, and then at the end of it, you know, like, what is it, you know, a real sportsman at the end, he extends his hand to the other guy. What does that mean? It means you fought well.
Yeah.
Right? That's a sportsman. Sportsman, you know, just looks at the guy and it means you've got no sport. You know, you're not a sportsman. You're a bad sport.
Yeah.
A bad sport. You know, good sport. I'll tell you a story. This is from Vietnam. There was some American forces. They were camped out someplace, and on a mountain above them, there was some Viet Cong encampment. And so the Americans sent up their, you know, they bombed the place. You know, I forget what they did. They, you know, cannons and this and that and the other thing, and still. After they, you know, were finished with their bombardment, the, you know, these shots came out from the enemy camp. So they, you know, they nuked the place. They, you know, just threw everything out. Not everything short of nuclear weapons. You know, they just threw. At the end, when the, you know, the smoke cleared and everything, and there was this guy still, you know, like one guy left. The Americans called the Vietnamese gooks, so they called these guys Luke the Gook. And he was, you know, there. So they, you know, then they threw everything else at him. You know, boom. And at the end, you know, this guy, like, and, you know, it's described, I forget what it was, but it was like the Americans were, like, kind of giving him a thumbs up. Why? Because he survived. You know, that's the sense of sportsmanship. Alexander the Great, his nemesis, his big enemy was Xerxes, king of Persia, as it happens. And they, you know, they were always going at it and chasing one another around and getting battles and everything. They were both very, very great generals. And when Xerxes finally was killed, Alexander went. Such a great general. Although his whole endeavor in so many campaigns was to kill this guy. When he finally was killed, Alexander went. While we're on Alexander, someplace along the line, his forces captured the wife and daughter of Xerxes. Xerxes was the king of the Persians. Alexander's forces captured that man's wife and his daughter. Xerxes was very powerful, very handsome, you know, real typical Kshatriya guy. His wife was equally
exquisite. Yeah.
Exquisite. We say now drop dead gorgeous. Like super ultra beautiful. And the daughter was a match for her mother. So these two women were captured. You can imagine what it would be, you know, the American army or the French army or, you know, German army capture them. Alexander gave orders. No one should touch them on pain of death. That they should be treated in such a way that they would hardly feel that they were away from their the protection of their husband or father, that they should always be honored and respected and should hardly even hear any bad news. You know how somebody, like Robin is telling Sita, you know, anything. They should not hear anything.
What a great end.
It's a principle.
That's a treasure.
Yeah.
That's Kshatriya spirit. That's Kshatriya. When we talk about dharma, it doesn't just mean, well, I'm Hindu, I'm Muslim, I'm Christian. That's not dharma. What are your principles? What are the principles that you follow in performing your duties? That's what determines whether you're a Kshatriya. You're just like Kali. You're a Kshatriya and you're beating a cow and a bull. You're not a Kshatriya. I'm a Kshatriya. I challenge you. You're going to die right now.
don't kill me, please.
You know, showed him for what he was. There's none of this, I'm Hindu, well, I'm Christian, I'm Muslim. That's not religion. What are the principles that you live by? So see Alexander's principles. They shouldn't be touched. And so much admiration he had for his enemy. Why? Because he was a great fighter. Although enemy, but such fighting ability. Where will we get a person like that again?
Same thing about Kurukshetra. They honored that when that general was killed, the enemy honored him like he did.
This describes that when someone was fighting, the other side is, wow.
Yeah.
They would respect, wow, just, did you see him do that? Did you see how he fought? They would respect. You're just as in sports, to give again, they would respect when the other guy does something great. He may be the other guy, he may be on the other team. But if you're really a sportsman, you say, wow, that was, I got to hand it to you. And while we're on sports, I'll tell you one final story, because we're slightly over time. And it has to do with religion. And, you know, the idea of, I'll just tell you the story. It was told to me by Yudhisthira, my publisher, in Bombay. Pakistan is fighting India over the World Cup. You know, it's like the ultimate rivals and the ultimate match.
Cricket,
right?
Cricket.
And there, Pakistan loses, just badly loses. And, you know, imagine now the team has to go back to Islamabad, you know, they're. So they interview the captain of the Pakistani team, and he begins, "At first I would like to thank Allah for everything he's done for us." And then he talks about whatever it is. Then they interview the captain of the Indian team. "Yeah, we had a great team, and everybody was working really hard, and there was fantastic teamwork, and we all worked together." You can consider, you know, where the God consciousness was. Okay, we've reached the end of this section, and we'll start. One final point. Some of you were asking about homework yesterday. I'm not following the schedule, and I'm not going according to the rules. I can do it my own way. So I'm not paying much attention to the homework, and I don't really care very much about the homework, and in fact the tool said you don't have to do the homework. So the main thing, try to keep up with the reading, see where we are and where we're going, you get a general idea how much territory we're covering in a day. So do try to keep up with the text, and don't worry about, you know, we didn't touch this question, we didn't touch that question,
where will the material for the exam come from?
It will come from Atul Krishna, so ask him where it comes from.
He said it's not from the questions. He said those questions are
the same questions.
If you're following along with the class, if you're awake, if you're on all this stuff, I'm sure that you'll do very well in the exam.
Hare Krishna.
Wherever
Jyotir Krishna is, we always
meet.
Jai
Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai
life. That's our blessing. Wherever Krishna is, we will always win. There will be always victory, even if we apparently lose.
Well, of course, there are big Maharati. They were there, the small soldiers were fighting.
See how the Kshatriya was
the Maharati.